and welcome to the Innovation Forum podcast for Friday 26th of February with me, Ian Welsh. A few days ago, I spoke with Andy Hoffman, the Holcim Professor of Sustainable Enterprise at the Ross School of Business and the School for Environment and Sustainability at the University of Michigan. He has some strong views on how business needs to evolve to embrace sustainability and diverge from the profit fixation that has, he argues, led to a crisis in capitalism. While business may be the problem, he argues that equally, business has to be the solution. It's well worth a listen. That's to come though. First, as usual, is some sustainable business news. More sustainable tree-based fibres for the apparel sector may be on the way via a new demonstration facility to be developed in Sweden by a venture called Tree2Textile, which is partly owned by clothing brand H&M, by IKEA, and a Finnish forestry business. After some years of research, Tree2Textile has developed a low energy and low chemical process to turn wood into fibres that can be used for apparel and furniture. Both sectors are under pressure to find less impactful alternatives to cotton, polyester and existing viscose supply that are economic. The plant will initially have a capacity of 1,500 tonnes. UK supermarket chain Sainsbury's has set up a trial to take back difficult-to-recycle plastic films at 60 of its stores in Northern England. The polypropylene films are not typically recycled by curbside schemes in the UK. The plastic is used for packaging for products such as cheese, biscuits and bread. If the pilot is a success, then it will be rolled out to all Sainsbury's stores by the end of the year. Perhaps the most interesting measure will be the level of consumer take-up of the scheme, particularly if there's no incentive involved. Consumers currently, of course, simply throw the plastic away. Some positive news from Chain Reaction Research in its latest study into palm oil sector deforestation in Southeast Asia. There were 38,000 hectares of deforestation in Indonesia, Malaysia and Papua New Guinea in 2020, with 22,000 hectares of this attributable to just 10 palm oil companies. 112 other businesses were responsible for the balance. The 2020 figures indicate that it was the lowest in the past 3 years, with 74,000 hectares cleared in 2018 and 90,000 in 2019, meaning a 58% drop year on year 2019 to 2020. Economic contraction and pandemic-related travel restrictions in Indonesia are among the reasons for the initial drop in deforestation seen early in 2020. Then further restrictions throughout the year in key export markets continued the trend, Chain Reaction Research think. The uptick in palm oil prices in 2021 may mean that deforestation rates likewise rebound this year. A February 2020 field survey revealed the 10 palm oil companies associated with the vast majority of the deforestation are indirectly associated via mills and intermediaries, with a large number of big international food and cosmetics brands with no deforestation pledges. The latest big company to take up a sustainability-linked financial instrument is the world's largest brewer, AB InBev. Parent to a number of well-known beer brands, including Budweiser and Corona, AB has signed up to a $10.1 billion revolving credit facility with a 5-year term, being provided by a consortium of 26 financial institutions led by ING and Santander. The cost of the finance is aligned with AB InBev's progress towards its sustainability targets on water use, energy, packaging and cutting emissions. AB InBev says it has set science-based targets that are aligned with the UN Sustainable Development Goals. Regular listeners will know that I highlight each week some of what's coming up for Innovation Forum over the next few months. I thought it would be interesting to speak with my Innovation Forum colleagues who are leading each project. So, earlier this week, I had a chat with Hannah Halmari, who is looking after the Sustainable Apparel and Textiles Conference coming up on the 27th to 29th of April. Welcome to the podcast, Hannah.
Thanks, Ian.
Why don't you start us off by giving us a bit of a rundown as to how the event is shaping up and the sessions that you're looking forward to in particular?
Yeah, it's shaping up really well. We've got a fantastic lineup of speakers, and it's great to have a number of leading brands involved, such as Nike, Patagonia, Puma, C&A, Yoox Net-a-Porter, just to name a few. They'll be speaking across a variety of focus sessions covering the key environmental and social issues in the industry, as well as innovations in the space. And in terms of what sessions I'm looking forward to in particular, the quick and easy answer would be all of them. All of our sessions cover such salient and important issues. But if I have to say one of them, I'm especially looking forward to our panel on politics, trade, and red lines on human rights. We'll have the Institute for Human Rights and Business and Human Rights Watch discuss how brands can navigate the politics and economics of truly ethical supply in the context of the global crackdown on Xinjiang cotton.
Well, that'll be a great session for sure. The Xinjiang cotton issue, obviously one that we've been discussing in the podcast over the past few weeks. So are there any recent additions to the speaker and panelist lineup?
Yeah, some of our new speakers include Sarah Mariani, Chief Sustainability Officer at OTB. She'll be speaking on the group's circularity initiatives and experiences. And we also have Tom Berry, Global Director of Sustainable Business at Farfetch, and he'll be speaking on the future of fashion retail and sharing Farfetch's new repairs and resale services.
Excellent. And who else are you particularly looking forward to hearing from?
Again, hard to narrow that down just to one, as all of our speakers will no doubt be fantastic. But, you know, one in particular is Rubana Hook, the president of Bangladesh Garment Manufacturers and Exporters Association. We'll be running a Q&A session with her on day three to get her views on what the future of Bangladesh's garment sector looks like.
Yes, I'll be running that session. I'm looking forward to it very much indeed. We've also got a pre-event workshop coming up on the 18th of March, haven't we? How's that going to be structured and what will we be talking about?
Yeah, that's right. All delegates who purchase their tickets in advance will have exclusive access to this pre-conference workshop. It's called The Roadmap to Regenerative Apparel. What does it look like and where will it take us? It's a virtual half-day workshop in which we'll be taking a closer look at regenerative apparel, specifically what it actually means and what it looks like in practice in the industry. So on the day, we'll have four interactive and focused sessions, and we'll hear from expert speakers from the Rodale Institute, Conservation International, Cotton Connect, APR, Patagonia, and Veja, as well as from regenerative farmers themselves.
Great. I'm looking forward to that very much indeed. Obviously, people that have registered for the conference will be able to attend this workshop. What else do you get as part of the package if you register for the conference in April?
Alongside the pre-conference workshop and main event itself, you also get a really valuable networking opportunity. The online platform allows you to pre-plan both one-to-one and group meetings before, during, and after the conference. And the conference itself is structured to be highly interactive and engaging. We run a variety of session formats, from Q&As to panels to working groups and issue-specific workshops that really enable you to get involved in the conversation and make the right connections. And of course, as with all of our conferences, we don't allow PowerPoint or script, so it'll be 3 days full of candid debate and discussion.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it very much indeed. And of course, listeners, the good news is that anyone who registers for the event by the 5th of March will save £100 on tickets. And I look forward to seeing you there. Hannah, thanks very much.
Thanks, Ian.
Earlier this week, I spoke with Professor Andy Hoffman from the Ross School of Business and the School for Environment and Sustainability at the University of Michigan. He has a new book coming out shortly titled Management as a Calling. We talked about why capitalism's models need to change and why the business leaders of tomorrow do seem to be taking a more holistic approach to sustainability as an essential part of all corporate functions.
So, Andy, you've got a new book, Management as a Calling, that's shortly to be published. What's the book about and why is it particularly relevant now?
There's a lot of people questioning capitalism, a lot of problems with capitalism. We're seeing them very vividly during COVID. And I think we need to start to graduate a different kind of business student, a student that's more focused on serving society. And I just feel that right now we try and instill a set of values in business students through a separate course on ethics or an oath at the end of the program. And I just don't think those are going to work in a curriculum that's designed around the idea of maximizing shareholder value above all else. One avenue to try and change it would be trying to change the curriculum, and that's challenging. Another is to get students to take on a sense of calling or vocation in their management education, much like we, in the spirit, we treat doctors and lawyers to serve society. And so students coming out of business schools, people going into business will have tremendous power. And with that power comes, to my mind, tremendous responsibility. The way to curb power and assess that responsibility, to my mind, is an appeal to conscience, appeal to a purpose that someone feels deeply inside. And that's what I'm trying to get across in this book.
You talk about purpose. I mean, do you think there's a sense that business has lost its purpose? And if so, what evidence do you have for that?
Well, I think that there are two problems within our society manifested by capitalism as it's presently structured. Capitalism is not a fixed state, is not a law of nature. It is a set of human-made institutions that can be adjusted to serve humans if they no longer do. And so I look at two problems in particular, one in the natural environment, climate change. This is caused by the market, which includes corporations, nonprofits, government, all of us. Capitalism doesn't seem to be able to address it. The second is income inequality. In this country, in the United States, income inequality is reaching epidemic proportions. Before COVID, there was a stat that came out from the federal government that 40% of Americans could not pull together $400 in an emergency. They're in that emergency right now. That's why we're having all these conversations about government stimulus and support. It's because the market's not working for a huge number of people. While at the same time, the stock market is booming, Jeff Bezos is poised to become the world's first trillionaire, clearly something's amiss. If we can start to restructure the idea of the purpose of the corporation, and importantly, restructure the role of the executives in running it, it's not to say that profits don't matter, but the primacy has gotten a little out of whack. Peter Drucker said the purpose of a corporation is to identify and serve a market. Profits are one measure of how well they do that. But at the end of the day, the worth of a corporation is how well it serves society. We can interchange society and market. Is it serving? That's the question.
From your point of view, then, is it the profit fixation that's been causing the damage?
I think so. And I think that there's a healthy debate that has started with the World Economic Forum, the Business Roundtable, even BlackRock, Larry Fink, the CEO, coming out and saying that the purpose of the corporation is not just to serve the shareholder, that it has other obligations within society. And I think that's great. Those are aspirational statements, though. And so the question is, how do we take those statements and put them into practice? And I would like to challenge future business leaders to take on that challenge, to make those statements real. That's my goal here.
If we could take the contention that capitalism is in crisis, and let's talk about that a little bit more. How does this crisis manifest itself? And we've talked a little bit about climate change, but how in particular are you seeing the capitalism's crisis manifesting itself?
Well, certainly climate change, and there's a whole host of environmental issues, whether it's ocean acidification, nitrification, species loss, habitat loss. We are having an amazing impact on the environment. Just to bring that into relief, I was born in 1960. There were 3 billion people on Earth. Today, there are 7.5 billion people, and by 2050, there are going to be 10 billion people, and the market has to serve them. How are they going to do that without just totally decimating the resource base that we have before us? It's a tremendous thorny challenge that the market has to solve. And similarly, with income inequality, how do we provide for an economy that serves everybody and not just the wealthy few? We can look at the extent to which the government has been dominated by powerful economic interests and start to rethink how we think of the role of government in the market. So these are all pieces that I'd like to see in revamping business education. I know Martin Parker over on your side of the pond at the University of Bristol has argued that we should take a bulldozer to all the business schools out there. You know, I'm not going to argue with that point of view. I just think it's not practical. If you want to fix the system, you have to start with the system as it is and then start to build from there. That's my goal.
So I guess what we're saying is that business is the problem, but it's best placed to be the solution as well.
Right. If you want to solve these problems, they have to be solved by the market. They have to be solved by business. The market is the most powerful orienting institution on earth. Business is the most powerful entity within it. If business isn't solving issues like climate change, it won't be solved. It's that simple. Whether it's new drivetrains under our hood, or more importantly, a new form of mobility, food, buildings, pharmaceuticals, all this comes from the market. All this comes from business. We have to turn the amazing power of business towards solving the problems that the market caused in the first place, but also recognizing we're all part of the market. We're all consuming the products and services that come out of the market.
How can business leaders then best equip themselves to be part of that solution?
If the organized institutions of education do not provide the total scope of what they need, then I think it's incumbent upon them, the students and the young professionals and older ones who are having a reassessment. I think about Ray Anderson at Interface at a very senior level. He did an about face and said, oh, I've gotten my role as chief executive all wrong and I need to change it. So I want people to start to think more in terms of legacy and impact and meaning and purpose, and not just status and wealth and the visible signs of consumption that dominate our notions of success in this world. I talk about calling and vocation with my business students, and I see a good number of them get very excited and light up over this. And that gives me hope. I think students are there. I think it's education that has been slow to catch up.
Let's think a little bit then more about the leaders of tomorrow, your current students. What evidence then are you seeing emerge that suggests that the next generation will really take a different approach? I mean, you mentioned you're seeing them getting excited, but you know, where's the hard evidence that they're going to take a different approach?
Well, you can look at numerous surveys that show that students today feel that environmental and social issues should be taught in business schools. There have been some really good and harshly hard-hitting critical essays, articles written by business students challenging the business school model. You have a good number of business students, again, by surveys, looking for purpose and meaning in their careers. You have corporations now recognizing that they don't address sustainability issues, whether on the social or the environmental dimension, then they're not going to attract the best and the brightest. Now, it's important. I don't want this book to be seen as a sustainability book, quote unquote, sustainability. I think this is important across the spectrum. Any student going into business, I want them to think about their career in the same way we think about if you were going into medicine. If anyone goes into medicine just to make money and not to help people, they're really in the wrong place. I'd like to see business start to adopt a similar mindset.
So do you think then that part of the problem is still that sustainability issues are taught in a silo? This is the sustainability program, and then you'll go talk about the real business stuff later. I mean, do you need then the sustainability to be across the entirety of a business school program?
I think so. If I had a magic wand, I would blow up the curriculum, pull in Parker's bulldozers, but I would just change the core. The core is all the tools of management, but we don't spend enough time teaching students where to use them and how to use them. And so the idea of a separate ethics course is somehow going to overpower the dominating influence of the core, which is really structured around the profit maximization. It's really foolish to think that that can win the day. We really need to rethink the overall education. When I first started teaching in business schools, how many years ago was that? Holy smokes, 25 years ago. Most students that wanted to change the world, they went into schools of government and nonprofit management. Today, I see more and more students who want to have a positive influence on the world going into business schools. And that's exciting. That gives me hope.
And are you seeing the current business leaders then seeing that they have to adapt their businesses to attract the students coming out of your school?
Certainly. Numerous CEOs have made statements that sustainability is central to who we are. They're recognizing that they need to have a workplace that allows people to realize their potential, their purpose, their meaning. You see that in the language. Some of it's cynical. I'm not naive. Some of it's just a cynical ploy to draw people, but some of them really mean it. There are some really thoughtful senior executives out there, Paul Polman, formerly at Unilever, or companies like Patagonia, others that are really pushing these ideas, and the students are clamoring towards them.
And I guess the next stage is going to be not just the outliers that we can all name, as you say, the Paul Polman, the Patagonias, and the Unilevers. It's when it's the kind of mass mainstream business starts to really take these things on board, which inevitably, I suppose they will, if they want to attract the business school students of right now. Thinking about the path of change then, what does this path look like? And does it have to be dramatic like Ray Anderson, or can it be incremental as well?
Well, I think there's a mixture of both. I have a chapter in the book talking about incremental change. Make these kinds of issues that can increase profit maximization. So electric cars, windmills, these are all innovations within the market that fit within the standard market parameters. But then the second is changing the system. And there's a lot of people talking about that, not a lot of specificity yet on exactly what that means. But it does go down to some core beliefs. What is the purpose of the corporation? What is the role of government in the market? What is the role of business in influencing public policy? All these things suggest a re-examination of the founding precepts of capitalism, of the market. And I would add that shareholder primacy has led to some pretty perverse outcomes. CEO compensation tied with share price. That is ripe for all kinds of manipulation, where a CEO can bump up the share price, get their stock dividends, move on, get their house in the mountains, and leave the problems for the next person. And so shareholder primacy focuses on one type of shareholder, one that is short-term focused, one that is more than happy to offset externalities on others. John Gamble, a corporate attorney, wrote a really great essay in Medium saying that the present system we have for corporate executives compels them to be sociopaths. They focus on themselves to the exclusion of everybody else. It's a textbook definition of sociopathy. But if you go back, even to the 1950s, corporations didn't think this way. They saw themselves as part of a community. Certainly they did some bad things, sometimes out of naivete, but the idea of being totally disconnected from society around them and focused only on the share price, that really has gotten us into some strange directions.
So we need to be a little bit of a back to the future then, perhaps. In closing then, and thinking of going forwards, what are the signposts that we should be looking out for that would indicate to you that real change that you're calling for is happening?
Well, in the business school, more and more students looking for content that goes beyond the curriculum that's delivered to them. I would love to see curriculum starting to change. I would love to see business schools start to re-examine their core courses, their course offerings, the way they're offering courses, to start to integrate these issues throughout the curriculum and not just have them as a separate ethics course. If that doesn't happen or that happens too slowly, I'd like to see more and more students starting to take it upon themselves to say, okay, I'm going to take this education, but it's only going to be one piece of my self-styled preparation to be a business leader. And I'm going to look other places to augment that education, to round me out, to make me into what I want to be, what I am meant to be, what I am called to be. There's a quote by Mark Twain. He says, the two most important days in your life are the day you were born and the day you find out why. And I would like the students to start to examine that, to discern why are they here and to what purpose are they going to put their career in business in order to make the world into one they want it to be.
Speaking of somebody who's still not quite sure why I'm here, it's a good point to close on. Andy, the book's coming out next month, isn't it? Management as a Calling.
Yes, it comes out March 2nd from Stanford University Press.
Thank you very much for your time today.
It was a real pleasure, Ian. Nice talking to you.
As ever, look out at innovationforum.co.uk for all the usual audio, interviews and insights, including a new piece of analysis on some of the innovations that are transforming the food sector. And don't forget to sign up now for the Sustainable Apparel and Textiles Conference in April and save £100 on conference passes. But that's all for now. I've been Ian Welsh and I'll be back next week.